Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Trevor Mountcastle and Tom Kim. This week, we're talking a long weekend to Madrid. Tom, how have you been?
I've been fine.
You sound so convinced of that.
Well, I haven't been to Europe like you.
I was about to say, I bet if you had just been to Madrid, you'd probably be a whole lot better than fine as well.
I didn't have any ice cubes drenched in gin or tonic or anything, so yeah.
And believe me, those ice cubes were absolutely fantastic. And for those that might not remember this, I think we talked about how wonderful the gin and tonic ice cubes were, or at least how you, Tom, had found them to be on episode 8, that epic guys trip.
Apparently from this particular bar in Madrid as well, you know, but we might be getting ahead of ourselves.
We very well might, but don't you worry. We will definitely be talking about Taberna El Rincón de José.
Oh, you actually know what it is? I had absolutely no idea until now. Probably have not even seen. I don't even know if when I was there, I was 100% of all my facilities that I even knew what the name of the bar was.
Don't worry. We found it last year. I think we talked about it on a previous episode. I just can't think of what episode we had with Easter last year. But the fun part is this trip is actually really linked to a bunch of different episodes that we've already talked about. The whole reason that we were in Madrid was actually we had the return from the originating Virgin Atlantic flight that we had originated in Mumbai with that we talked about in episode 19 when we were flying home from the Maldives.
You know, this would not be the first trip that, and I've definitely taken one where, you know, more than one, I come to think of it, where I bought some airfare that started off in the Maldives or somewhere in that region.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a period of time where you could get some really cheap fares out of Maldives. I kind of wish that those would come back because I'd probably go back far more frequently than I think I can do it at this point. Even Colombo, Sri Lanka is significantly higher, although I think that, I don't know if they had a civil uprising or a civil war, but they didn't fare the pandemic period as well as I think most countries would have hoped.
They had a bit of economic collapse, I think. And some, yeah, they did have some, I think, some civil unrest or some sort of governmental problems or something. They didn't fare quite as well as they had in the past.
Yeah, yeah. And I definitely remember a bunch of people jumping into the presidential palace's pool. I mean, when you can get away with that, then perhaps there's some unrest going on.
Yeah, probably not worth a mileage run to, you know, get yourself and put yourself in the line of fire.
No. Although I do recommend Sri Lanka. I mean, it's a wonderful little country. We got to only see Colombo and a nice little beach town closer to the airport. We didn't get to the other side over by that new, is it still new or the, is it, I'm trying to think. So I think the Chinese funded another major international airport and it's like a ghost airport somewhere in Sri Lanka.
I think it was the former president's hometown.
Oh, that could do it. But I think we're getting way off tangent.
I was going to say,
very
like,
early.
Wow, this is you managed to get us totally off tangent very, very quick, by the way. Anyway, well, maybe you want to talk a little bit about this trip that you just took then. We know now that it's the return part of a trip you already took from earlier in the year. So I think to start off, it sounds like you had some interesting lounge visits, right?
We did. So the Chase Sapphire Lounge just opened in the old Etihad Lounge. And they expanded it. They kicked out some walls. They added a bunch more. So this was actually my second visit because I had stopped in there on my way out to San Antonio for the Award Travel 101 or 201 or both in late April. And I have to say that I'm becoming more and more impressed with this lounge. I think there are some rough edges that they have. The bar, they're still trying to kind of get better at that. But if you can do all the either in-app or ordering through a waiter or waitress, I think it ends up being a lot better. The assistant manager at the time when we went in, and I think they do limit, if you don't have a Chase Sapphire reserve, I think you might get limited in premier times. But with a Chase Sapphire reserve and the priority pass associated with that, I have not been denied when other people were being asked a little bit more questions.
There wasn't a line and to go in or anything like that?
No line, thankfully. I mean, I think we waited a moment to talk to somebody, but that's about it. But the assistant manager, so they directed us to the children's area. And they have this awesome little children's room. They've got a nice little plane. They've got a whole lot of, they've got like three or four plain stuffed kind of pillows. It was just a wonderful little area that we pretty much camped out in for, I think, an hour, 90 minutes, something like that. They brought the food in. They brought drinks in. There was never a want for anything, quite candidly. And I think that's a very unique experience in a lounge at Dulles.
Is that your new favorite compared to the Capital One Lounge now, or is it?
I don't think I loved the Capital One Lounge to start because you're so far away from the gates that you have got to leave the lounge some amount of time earlier than you really want to. The other thing that I'm noticing is the Capital One Lounge often has a wait even when other lounges don't. So when I did the San Antonio thing, it was like an hour wait to get into Capital One, and then there was no wait to get in the Chase Sapphire Lounge. And so even though I was flying United, I stopped by the Chase Sapphire Lounge, then was able to hop back on the little train and still get to my gate over in the Seagates, and no problem on that one. This one, of course, we were going out of either A or B gates, and so we just went from the Chase Sapphire Lounge to the Virgin Atlantic Lounge.
Oh, so how is that? I've kind of been wanting to know what the latest is on the Virgin Atlantic Lounge.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a similar experience to the Chase Sapphire Lounge in that they also have a menu service and stuff. I thought the food was better in the Virgin Atlantic Lounge.
Oh,
I don't know that I'm surprised about that. Just the burger that we had in the Chase Sapphire Lounge is perfectly good, but it's not incredible. It's just kind of, they got the burger from Costco in the huge big pack and they just threw it on the grill and then put it on a sandwich or on sandwich rolls. This one felt a little bit more artisanal, perhaps not as artisanal as the Polaris Lounge, as we're talking about burgers. But I definitely felt like the food was just a little bit better at the Virgin Lounge.
We're going to have to introduce a Trevor Burger score for lounges.
Oh, I don't have burgers terribly often.
Well, apparently you only have them in lounges.
It does seem that way. The interesting thing I thought about the Virgin Lounge was perhaps this was, a little bit far into our lounge experience. I started tasting scotches because I'm chatting with them. I'm like, oh, you've got a 15-year Glenlivet. I think they might have had a Lafroig. I'm like, oh, I haven't had any of those. And so they just keep bringing them to me. I'm like, oh, that's nice. Hand me one. And I've got it. I probably have it somewhere in a tweet. But one was particularly smoky. And they warned me. And I was like, you were not kidding about that one. That might have been the Lafroig. But don't quote me on that. I'll have to double check that tweet that I had.
So were they turning away priority pass people at the Virgin Lounge?
I can't remember, to be honest with you. It was so late. At this point, it was 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Oh,
I think
they
were past the premium time, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I guess Virgin's flight is kind of late, isn't it? I had forgotten about this.
It is. It is. And it's interesting because when we flew in from Mumbai via London, the aircraft just sat overnight because it got in so late. Like, we actually ordered the mobile lounges right from the aircraft. So, like, it seems like the aircraft sits for a long, long time, which boggles my mind. But who are we to question Sir Richard Branson's airline's logic?
Was it a 330?
Oh, that's a hard...
Did I just touch a nerve?
You touched a little nerve, my friend.
Oh, no.
So...
I'm sorry. It wasn't my intent. I was going to say, if it was a 330, they probably are like, oh, let it sit.
So, originally, it was a 787-9. Mm-hmm. Then it was an A350, and we got really excited that we were going to get the new seats and everything.
I'd be excited to be on a 350, yep.
Oh, yeah, we were so excited. And then a week out, it changed back to, I think, a 787-9. And then a couple of days later, it changed to an A330.
Wow, they just cannot make up their mind about the equipment, huh?
No, I mean, my gosh, I felt like this was worse than Thai and Qatar combined.
That's pretty bad. You had to go to like three different equipment type with technically three different seats, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the 787 was the same seat as the 330.
350? Or the 330?
Yeah, yeah. The 350 was the only with the 1-2-1 configuration.
Okay.
So needless to say, that was a little bit of a letdown. It was even more of a letdown in that our yo-yo type stroller that we put in the overhead doesn't fit on the A330 and we later found out the A340 just because of how they have just a little bit more narrow of a fuselage, so that overhead is just not as big.
It's too narrow.
Yeah.
Even the middle overhead bins?
It wouldn't fit on the A330 and on the A340, which we'll get to at the end because that was our last flight, there was no over middle bins.
Well, I guess it depends on the airline too. Yeah, sometimes they omit those in premium class.
Yeah, yeah. But luckily we had chocolates and the crews were just more than happy to put it in the closet and there was no problem at all. One potential area of friction removed completely because the crews were just absolutely amazing. Late night flight, not the most amazing food, not the most amazing overall experience that you get because, you know, you're trying to balance the fact that you want to experience the flight and you want to sleep. They do give pajamas on the night flights. So we finally have our Virgin pajamas, which was nice and comfortable. Overall, not great, not horrible. I hate to say it, not the most memorable. Would we do it again? Probably. Would we avoid it? I don't think we'd avoid it, but it would definitely have to be something that we really wanted to do. It would have to be convenient.
You know, when I cross the Atlantic, especially from here or from New York, actually anywhere from the East Coast for that matter, I always feel like those redemptions in business or premium classes always feel a waste because it's so short. It's such a short flight. I've actually, the last couple of times I've crossed the Atlantic, at least on the way there, we've been doing a lot more. We did that same Virgin flight, but we did it in economy. God forbid, I know it's kind of an odd idea for you to cross an ocean in economy, but it's not so bad. And, you know, I don't mind it only because, again, it's not much further than going to LA. And, you know, I don't have to do that in first class every time. So, you know, it makes sense for me sometimes just to take the really cheap redemption. No, it's only like 10,000 Virgin miles. I'm quite a bit in taxes, but you know, still, it's a very low mileage award to get a Dulles to Heathrow award ticket. So anyway, just my two cents.
And I love that. I really appreciate that. I keep on trying to convince myself of that, but the reality is I land refreshed, and I really appreciate that even on a short flight.
I never land refreshed on a transatlantic, even in first class.
I seldom fly first class on a transatlantic that is just going to Europe, let alone, well, I don't even think you can do it to London anymore. Well, I suppose you can on British Airways.
You can on British, but I mean,
yeah, I mean, that's,
do you really call that first class?
Yeah, kind of like business class plus. Actually, it's a downgrade from the club suites from what I hear.
It kind of is because you don't even get a door, or you never did.
Exactly. I think I've figured out the transatlantic travel for the most part. So anyway, we get to London. And this is the interesting part. For our listeners, probably listening back in the beginning, are thinking, okay, they had an itinerary that started in Mumbai via London back to Dulles, and then they're going back to London, and then they're going to Madrid. Kind of an interesting story there. We were supposed to go back to Mumbai, but just with the way that work and life had been, we said, we're not really up for adventure so much as going someplace comfortable. And so we pretty much did that kind of skip-lagged approach, not intentionally, but we threw away the London-Mumbai leg, which...
The longer leg, huh?
Yeah. I got to tell you, that hurt doing it. But as we'll talk about, I think it was really the right call. Now, you were commenting about transatlantic in economy. We actually did fly from London via Frankfurt to Madrid in economy, as crazy as that sounds. It's Euro flights, so it's...
I was going to say, like, what's Eurobiz? I mean, you could, I guess, just buy a middle seat and you could go ahead and upgrade yourself to Eurobusiness?
Except that there are three of us, so okay. It actually worked better having us all in economy. I think I missed out on wine on the flight, but not a huge deal. So have you been to the lounges in the Queen's Terminal, Tom?
I have never been to the Queen's Terminal. I've yet to make it to the Queen's Terminal. I have been a T5, T3 guy, kind of guy. At Heathrow. So I've been to 5 and 3 multiple times, but somehow never make it to the Queen's Terminal, never end up flying Star Alliance over to Heathrow or back.
I feel like this terminal is my most frequent terminal nowadays, even more so than T5. I barely spend any time in T3, unfortunately. I really want to. Like, I was actually hoping that we would get a chance to have like a long layover in T3 just to do lounges.
You had arrival benefits probably, even though you were technically, I guess.
Yeah, we didn't have enough time.
Okay.
So we had only about an hour and a half to transit terminals. And so,
okay, well, that's not a lot of time.
Yeah. So we went right to a priority pass that was like literally like you get through whatever security or whatever formalities you had to go through, go to the priority pass lounge, kind of uninspiring, went to the Lufthansa lounge, come to find out that the flight is delayed, which gave us a little more time in the Lufthansa lounge, unfortunately, because being delayed out of London meant that we were going to be late into Frankfurt. And we, do you remember us talking about that like a week or
I totally remember. And I was thinking to myself, what is Trevor trying to do? Is he Sam and Robert? I mean, like what's going on? Like, why is he like forcing such a short connection in Frankfurt?
I wanted to get to Madrid for dinner.
Ambitious.
It was overly ambitious. And it's funny that you bring up Sam and Robert. So I think Robert or Sam, I can't remember which, was talking about not wanting to connect in European airports if they could avoid it. Yes, Robert was talking about his trip to Italy in a recent episode. And he's talking about how, you know, you make the wrong turn and suddenly you're going through customs, you're going through immigration, suddenly you're at your landside. And the whole thing is you're just completely turned around. And now it's been an hour. You're just getting back to airside. I'm here to tell you, I've been to Frankfurt probably 3 to 5 dozen times. I don't think it's overstating it that I've probably flown through Frankfurt Airport 50 to 60 times.
60 times.
I'm
a little incredulous, but okay. I know you're Mr. Lufthansa first class. All right, fine. But still, that's a lot of time.
Maybe it's 40 times. But I mean, going to Ghana, I went to Ghana 4 or 5 times. And I went through Frankfurt 3 of those.
Well,
that's 6 times.
You don't need to justify. You don't have to justify your numbers. It's okay. It's okay.
I'm just trying to do the quick
math. Continue,
yeah.
Please. Continue, please.
So here we are. We're already stressed because now we've got about 35 or 40 minutes before departure. You know, so we've got, 25 minutes before the gate closes. And we come off, and there is not a single Lufthansa person to say, Mountcastle family, can you please come this way? We can get you to your flight. Nope. We follow the signs. We are in a different frame of mind because we're now, are we going to make our plane? We're hustling one way or another. Suddenly we find ourselves on an air train and we're going through and now we've got to go through customs and immigration. And suddenly we're at the point now where we're looking at the big board. We're landside looking at the big board over by the check-in area. And my wife and I look at each other and we're like, it's still 10 minutes to get to this plane, or there's still 10 minutes to go. Maybe we can make it. We get through security. I mean, my calves are burning, shoulders burning. We're passing the baby. We're passing our daughter between the two of us, literally running through this terminal because we didn't even take the time to put the stroller back out. We're just running back to make this plane. And we get there and the gate agents aren't even there. I mean, we probably missed it by 10, 15 minutes after all was said and done.
You weren't even close.
We weren't even close.
Yeah. Sounds like the moral of the story here, listeners. There's a moral of the story here.
55 minutes is not enough in Frankfurt.
I think you asked that question. I don't know why you were asking my permission, which I didn't give you, I don't think.
I don't think I asked your permission. I think I asked your opinion.
Well, I don't know. I don't know why you were asking my opinion. You were going to do it anyway.
I was trying to figure out how crazy I was. I mean, I've done crazy things.
I told you you were crazy and okay. Not to say anything, but you know, I was right. But
do you feel vindicated?
I totally feel vindicated. Well, I totally feel that my knowledge on this was 100% accurate.
Yeah. After about 30 seconds of staring at the gate dejected, without any words, we just start walking back to the gate. We are not completely... There's no meltdowns. There's no, what are we going to do? It was all, okay, well, we know what we need to do next.
At least you weren't trying to catch like a flight to like Bangkok or something. You know, it's like you were trying
I would have left a lot more time if I was going to Bangkok.
I was going to say, it's like, at least you were going someplace that was in the same Schengen area as Germany.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in my mind, if we didn't make the wrong turn, we would have been fine. We arrived, if you know those gates, right? You've got that kind of V sort of thing. We arrived on the left of the V and we had to go out of the right V. This is not crazy. This is probably the same distance from arriving at the end of one lollipop at Reagan National and then having to go to the E gates.
But you know what? Last I checked, Britain, not in the Schengen zone.
Yeah, but even that's 10 minutes at most, if you do it right. Needless to say, we make it to the lounge. Again, we're on an economy ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
We break out our trusty American Express Platinums. I made sure both of us had them because I didn't want to get into a situation that I think you might have run into in London Heathrow at one point.
Oh, I know. It's easy to forget. It's easy to forget.
It is. And they had wait. We walk right up to the desk, explain the situation, and they put us on the next flight. They're apologetic because this was supposed to be like a 4:30 or 5 o'clock flight. And now we're on a 8 o'clock flight. Big deal. We can make this work. We were turning our lemons into lemonade. Before we even got to our seats in the lounge, they had already sent us €45 worth of certificates for food.
For being late or arriving late or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, for arriving later than originally scheduled. So all was pretty well. Got some schnitzel in the lounge, got some bubbles.
By the way, you could have just booked that flight because, you know, they do eat dinner in Madrid like after midnight.
I know, but we were all exhausted. We got to the hotel at 1 a.m. We were exhausted. I'll get there in a second.
I'm rushing ahead, huh? Okay.
I'm sorry. Well, the last thing we did in the lounge was I traded our 88,000 per person business class flights via Munich home for first class on Lufthansa. It was a nice little moment because we had that downtime to do a quick search and actually ended up having to call Life Miles, which was not desirable.
Your return flight was on Life Miles, huh?
It was. And it was only 80,000 miles. So I traded 88,000 United for 80,000 Life Miles. It felt like a screaming deal to me. You're not sold.
I mean, to me, calling Life Miles is worth a few thousand miles at least.
Yeah, but my wife was really, really excited about the idea of flying Lufthansa first class again. And
are you going to talk about Lufthansa first class now, or are we going to hear about Madrid?
I think we should go to Madrid.
Okay. Let's hear about Madrid. Let's hear about the lovely capital of Spain.
So we arrived in Madrid late, hopped an Uber, simple stuff, right? Get to the Thompson Madrid. At this point, it's now a 25,000 point hotel per night, which I think is a little bit much. But when you look at the rate they were charging, I think it was reasonable compared to what we ended up getting. If we were just in a regular room, maybe not. Obviously, after a full, we're approaching 24 hours of travel. I'm a little punchy at check-in, and I pretty much just said, hey, any chance, number one, we're returning guests. And I built a rapport with one of the gentlemen at the front desk because I recognized him. And I said, hey, any chance for an upgrade for a returning globalist? And they sort of hemmed and hawed. They looked, they couldn't find anything. And then they're like, you know what? We're going to put you into a room tomorrow. I'm going to block it out right now. And so this is not the first time I've had that, but it was definitely the most clearest time that I've had this. And we were just floored with how great the experience was. They moved our bags. They ensured everything got moved into this beautiful new suite. We had a door. Often they have suites, the junior suite sort of experience where you don't have a door. This had a full door. Our daughter slept on her nap or went to sleep early, and we sat up and chatted and had no problem with that. The Thompson treated us great, especially as returning guests.
Is the Thompson your go-to now for Madrid for time immemorial, or are you open to other hotels in Madrid?
I think we're definitely open to other hotels. I like the location of the Thompson. I think north of 25,000 points is going to be really hard to stomach. But if you look at others, I mean, the Westin, I think, is like 80 or 90,000 Bonvoy points. So I don't know that you can find stuff for cheaper is the problem. I think that's just a very expensive city now for hotels.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, I haven't actually stayed in a hotel in Madrid for a while, but it didn't used to be that expensive a city. I guess maybe I haven't really looked at the prices for hotels, but I guess maybe it is now.
Seems like it. It could have been the holiday that we were there, but it was 600 to 800 euro a night. And so 25,000 points felt like a deal.
Yeah, that's expensive for a hotel. I don't know if I want to pay that much for a hotel.
I mean, the problem is where are you going to stay then? Or are you just not going to go to Madrid?
There are lots of options, you know. You got to see what there is out there. And I would imagine Europe in particular, there are interesting. I remember when I stayed there years ago, we stayed at, I think, a Trip hotel. It's spelled TYRP, which is some sort of weird Spanish brand of hotels, which I think is aligned with, I forget which hotel chain they're part of. I don't know if they're like a Choice or are they a Wyndham or something, but
that's a really good point. Choice hotels are like the unsung heroes of Europe.
I was going to say, my guess is that if you're Team Bonvoy or Team Hyatt or Team Hilton in Europe, you may be limiting yourself only because Europe has some strange strength in some of the other hotel brands, whether they be Choice or even Radisson or, you know, like some of these other ones that other companies that we're not used to as Americans. But there's some very European only kind of brands of hotel out there. But anyway.
And believe me, I've been looking more and more at those as we look at our upcoming trip to the French and Italian Riviera.
Ah, well, that's good.
We're doing everything we can not to be just American chain centric.
Yeah, I think you're probably behooves you. I mean, Accor. I mean, that's one that comes to mind immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you're talking Europe, especially France.
I don't think their search tool is nearly as robust, though, which was it's frustrating. Not. But,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Such is life.
Another tangent.
Gosh, is this a long weekend to Madrid or a long tangent with the occasional Madrid discussions?
I think if you're going to get a podcast with the two of us, you're going to have a little bit of meandering in your discussion from time to time.
It kind of makes it fun. It kind of makes it fun. So this trip was all about relaxation. We didn't really want to do too much touring. Because it was Madrid Day, we encountered more than a couple of 18th century military processions. I mean, we're talking troops in full gear, muskets.
Is this like a national holiday, like celebrating something in Spain or something?
Yes. I should have had that researched.
Trevor, are you not a scholar when it comes to the traditions and the history of the great nation of Spain?
I know. I should.
I'm just kidding. No, just continue. Continue.
So it was the day of the Autonomous Community of Madrid.
Okay.
It's a public holiday. We'll just go with that.
Okay.
There might have been some revolutioning or some freedoming or something to that effect. But there were lots of 18th century soldiers, some on horseback, which our daughter really enjoyed. And we also tried to go to a handful of parks. And so the first day, we ended up going over by the palace, which is where we saw the processions. And we walked over to there's this big park. I mean, they have this slide and play area that has got to be a story and a half tall. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are talking everything. They had slides, they had swings, they had it all. Didn't really do too much there because it was a little bit crazy, but seeing it and sort of knowing it was there. Right nearby, though, they had a Pan American event. So think like Christmas markets, but with caipirinhas and all things Central and South America.
Sounds like something right up your alley.
It was fun. I definitely had a caipirinha while we were there.
Was it as good as the ones we had in the steps? I'm trying to remember what those steps were called.
The Serrano steps?
Or no, it was something similar. I forget. I think we just talked about this recently, too.
Oh, we did.
The famous steps.
Yes, the famous steps. The famous steps.
With the best caipirinha in all of Brazil.
And the one in Madrid didn't hold a thing to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, no. I'm going back to those steps when I go back to Brazil for that caipirinha.
So it sounds like something interesting happened there. It's something worth mentioning as a cautionary tale.
Yeah. So this park is off of Gran Via, which is kind of the Fifth Avenue of Madrid. And so we're crossing, making our way back to the hotel. As we're crossing the street, my wife looks at the throngs of people. I mean, this is like Walt Disney World during like Christmas. There are people shoulder to shoulder. They're on top of each other. I mean, there is no personal space here. And my wife just nonchalantly puts her phones into our diaper bag, which we have hanging off of the stroller. Okay. And I'm like, and I look at that and I'm like, okay, that's smart. But I wanted to keep one of my phones out because we travel with two phones, a Google Fi and iPhone, that's T-Mobile. And I wanted to keep one phone out because I wanted to be able to watch, make sure I had the directions because we didn't commonly go on Gran Via. So two or three blocks in, we're right by a theater. There was like a Lion King theater or show. And suddenly the people in front of us stop because there's a bunch of kids walking perpendicular. I hit the people in front of us with the stroller because they stopped that abruptly. This couple behind us hits us, kick my shoes. And then I suddenly feel a little movement in my left pocket where I happen to have my phone. Mm-hmm. I feel down, no phone. And in the span of about 15 or 20 seconds, I turn around and I see this young kid. I say young kid, he was probably in his 20s. With my phone in broad view, trying to hand it or shove it into his female partner's hand. And I just snatched the phone back and my New Yorker came out. I mean, I actually had a New York accent. I mean, I said some colorful words, my friend. Mm-hmm. My adrenaline was going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was one of those things where, I don't say this lightly, I was shaking with adrenaline. I wanted to do something a whole lot more than yell at this person. I restrained myself. I pretty much told him to get lost. And this kid was stunned. I don't know if they were intentionally, like he had this big jacket and it was not a cold day. I don't know if he was full of other people's phones or wallets or stuff. And he was just like, oh my God, somebody actually caught me. This never happens. Or if he was like just seeing an opportunity and just jumped at it and it backfired on him. These two were just completely stunned. And here I am, some crazy New Yorker.
Was kind of the reason you stopped, did that feel manufactured? Like, did somebody, you know, was that part of the scheme? Or was it just they happened to take the opportunity when they saw a group of people were kind of stopped?
So here's the thing. I don't think it was manufactured because there were kids that couldn't have been involved in this that were going to this Lion King show.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
If they do this regularly, they probably know the times that show is going to start. And they could leverage that. My wife mentioned that she had noticed them walking close to us for about a block or two. They demonstrated some level of premeditation.
Sure.
We dodged the bullet. Thank God. We dodged the bullet.
Yeah, it was a near miss.
It was. They didn't go for the wallet. I think an iPhone in your pocket And these are not jean cut pockets, which was probably my other problem, right? Because, you know, it's warm weather. I had my normal shorts that don't have the jean cut pocket. And so it was just a nice, easy slip. And I'm just so thankful that I actually caught it. I'm also thankful that I didn't really give in to the adrenaline and do something I was going to regret.
Yeah, no, that's good to, it's also good to keep your calm. I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, it does raise your blood pressure, your adrenaline, you know, when someone's going for your property, going to defraud or to steal from you, you know, so it's easy to get carried away. But also good advice, you know, if you're in that situation, if you're in an area where you're going to have no personal space and shoulder to shoulder with a lot of people you don't know, it's probably a good idea to secure your stuff. That's probably what I take away from this, at least.
Absolutely. The last thing I'll say is this felt like an invasion like few other experiences I've had. You just don't, you know, you think, oh, pickpocketed, big deal, right? When you had your backpack taken in Barcelona, did you feel like it was an invasion?
Oh, of course. It's a personal affront, you know? You have a little bit of PTSD, you know, when you have something like that happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't share that to scare people. We've traveled the world, right? 60-some-odd countries, probably been to many of those countries many, many times. And that this is the first time to have that experience. I mean, I almost think that that's kind of impressive when you think about it, right? Or maybe illustrative of maybe how infrequent it probably is that travelers get pickpocketed. I hope it's illustrative of that.
Well, I mean, so far, the only data points that we have of major theft between the two of us are all in the lovely country of Spain. So that probably is more than a little bit. I'll just say, listeners, if you're going to Barcelona, if you're going to Madrid, be on extra good behavior with your belongings. We'll go ahead and say that now, because we don't have too many data points of crime in our many, many visits to dozens of countries, whether they be five dozen or otherwise. At the same time, definitely seems like there are certain places that are much more conducive to petty crime. And Spain seems to be one of those places.
It's a shame. Such a wonderful country, too.
Yeah. I'm not saying don't go to Spain. Just, you know, maybe hold on a little tighter to your stuff, you know?
Yeah, get that Scotty vest.
Yeah. Leave some stuff back at your hotel room or something. I don't know.
There's lots of options for,
lots of
for
ways.
Keeping your
lots
stuff safe.
Lots of strategies to keep your stuff safe. Let's move on from that downer of a subject to something more interesting.
Like I said, most of the focus was walking, relaxing, just kind of, you know, re-baselining ourselves after a few stressful weeks. We tried to go to kids' parks. We found some kids' parks. We went over by the Prado. On Sundays, they shut down that street right next to the Prado. It's the part of the, it's a separated street, and whichever direction is right next to the Prado for like, I want to say it's like 3 or 5 blocks between the gardens and the Prado. They shut that down for pedestrians.
This is one of the major galleries in Madrid, by the way, for those who are not familiar.
Yes, yes, the Prado Museum Art Gallery. And so they shut that down. So we walked up and down that a little bit. We went to Taberna El Rincón de José, which is that famous location of gin and tonics.
Famous to us, but probably not to anyone else, you know.
True, true.
Famous for the two people on this podcast.
And don't forget Joey and Jeff.
Okay, fine. Other people as well. Fine. But famous to a small cadre of friends.
I'm sharing that name. I'm hopeful that some of our listeners go there and say, hey, oh, this is the place they were talking about.
And it is literally very close to the Prado. So if you happen to be doing some art exhibiting in Madrid, it is not too far a journey to this place.
Yeah, it's like 2 blocks in and maybe a block or 2 down. And they have just wonderful gin and tonics. And so we sat there we went there twice. We probably had a drink or two. Jose, I think, is the owner because he now knows us. He knows our seats. I don't know. It's fun. It's fun. He's probably laughing at us. Oh, those silly Americans. But
he's probably wondering, what the hell are they back here for?
Well, and we met him when we were there in April of last year, too. It just makes it fun. And then we did find one nice little park among a collection of cafes.
Were you the only non-Spanish speaker in that bar?
No. There were some either expats or there were some English speakers in there. Yeah.
There were some others. Okay.
Yeah, we were not the only ones.
All right.
I mean, it would have been fun. I mean, we do like going to the local bars. That said, on Sunday, probably about by 1 o'clock, that bar was hopping. I mean, it was pretty full. There were a lot of locals there too.
When we were there, you know, the one time we were there together, obviously, it definitely felt like a local place. Like, it did not absolutely feel like it was a place for catering to tourists at all.
And that's why we like it. I mean, if we can find those local places, we're always happier for it. We did find this nice little cafe closer to Plaza de Sol. Collection of cafes had a kids park, little slide, sort of jungle gym sort of thing right next to it.
I forget sometimes the joy of having just, you know, taking a kid to a nice kids park. I mean, you know, it really doesn't take sometimes very much to make them happy. You know, it's funny. I was walking in my neighborhood with my nephew this past weekend, and he's like, "Oh, can we go to the little playground?" And I'm like, "Oh, it didn't even occur to me that that would be a fun thing to do." As some people probably realize, I am not a parent.
A great uncle, though.
No, but it's interesting. You know, just don't forget, it can take very little to amuse our young ones.
No, it's true. And this was kind of unique for us. I say it's unique as Americans, not unique for Europeans. Kid park between two cafes. We got a table right next to the kid park. We're sitting, drinking gin and tonics. Our daughter is able to go back and forth to the playground. And it's literally just, you know, it's a fenced in U. So she walks from the table up, then back into the U, goes on a slide, kind of, you know, plays on the different things. She can come up to us along the fence. It's short enough, I could lift her right from my seat. And then she also had the freedom. We gave her the freedom if she wanted to run around back through the U, back to the table and back.
So are you telling me that it's not American to drink in the park?
I'm saying it's not American to have kids with that much freedom in such a public area. I mean, we had our eyes on her the whole time, but in some cases, she was 100 feet away from us.
Oh, so basically it was the illusion of freedom.
It was the illusion of freedom. Yes, yes, yes. In Europe, there are articles that we read about Germans, that kids that would hop on the bus themselves, go down the block to the park on their own. We're not there, but we really like the idea of being able to sit, enjoy ourselves, and she had some freedom.
That was me in second grade. I don't think my parents wanted to let people know that, but probably nowadays, probably, I wouldn't recommend it. But yep, public bus, second grader. Yep, that's me.
I mean, but you have the freedom and you had the independence. And look at you now. You are a citizen of the world, my friend.
It's great until you fall asleep on the bus and you're second grader. Then that's a little, it's a little troubling. Can be a little challenging. I guess I'm no worse for the wear. And maybe I did live through some adversity, but oh well. Anyway. Back to Madrid.
Yeah, other than that, not a ton to share. I mean, we had a lot of great food. We had a lot of great gin and tonics. We had a lot of great kids parks that our daughter just had tons of fun at.
By the way, listeners, I'm going to officially, for right now, I'm going to go ahead and give Melbourne a vacation, because we're about to hear about something and I want to give people an opportunity to have a beverage of their choice. So we are going to go back to 2023. The word of the day is Lufthansa wears glass. Okay, back to you, Trevor.
So that's actually a great segue. So departing Madrid, we were flying Madrid via Munich. The Euro trip was Euro business, not amazing. We did fly Lufthansa first class from Munich home.
Drink.
Yes, yes, yes. Clink, clink.
Clink, the, clink. Chin, chin.
I have to say, the Munich first class lounge, I know a lot of people like it. I just don't see what they see.
Having been to the terminal and the lounge did you really feel like the food and beverage were suffering in some way? I feel like those are not too dissimilar.
No, I thought that they were very attentive, almost more attentive in the Munich lounge than they were in the terminal. Other than the front desk people that check you in, they were very, very attentive and they were wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Can you still rent a Porsche?
I don't think you can do that in the lounge. I think you can only do that at the terminal, and I don't know if they offer
that. Oh, it's
only
at the terminal?
Yeah, Amal, I think, mentioned on Twitter that you can't do that anymore. He did it, which was impressive. The thing I think about Munich is that you lose some of that ground experience. I think the ground experience for Lufthansa first class is just the thing that sets them above. And so the terminal...
Well, unless you get the minivan.
I'll take the minivan. I will take the minivan versus having to go through, walk to your gate and having to go through the additional screening that you have to do in Munich. And I assume you have to do in Frankfurt if you do the lounge.
If you did the lounge instead of the terminal.
Yeah. The lounge itself, wonderful, wonderful. Was busy when we were there. We made time for a Wiener Schnitzel, which was wonderful. Had a couple of glasses of champagne. Found that those nice little flower displays that they have on the table are natural and full of water.
It sounds like another cautionary tale. This seems to be a cautionary tale kind of episode.
Also found that Lululemon ABC pants dry very quickly, thank God.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Crisis was avoided. Definitely spilled the entirety of a glass of water and the water from the plants all over my lap. And by the time it was time for us to leave, I didn't look like I had lacked self-control, shall we say.
So I'm excited to hear about the aircraft, because this is a classic, the one that you were about, I hope maybe that you're about to tell us about. Is that not correct?
It is a classic. And if I recall, they pulled them out of retirement. They were supposed to be retired in the pandemic. And with revenge travel, Lufthansa said, we have got to get these A340-600s back in the sky.
They're not flying 777-9s, right? So,
true. We won't talk about that one. I think that's, what, another 2-3 years out?
Yeah, at least at this point.
Yeah, yeah. I think Boeing has other problems that they've got to, that are more near and urgent for them.
That's not for this podcast.
Plenty of
others. But I do want to hear about these. Can I say it? Can I say what the aircraft is?
I mentioned the aircraft, but are you going to tell us about the special feature of the aircraft?
Oh, wait, you want me to tell? No. Let's let the person who flew. Okay, come on.
So if there's one thing that I think I've learned, Lufthansa First Class, or Lufthansa in general, I will say, really seems to pride themselves on some unique bathroom situations.
I think this is German culture here. There's something German, very German about this, I think.
I will have to take your word for it. But the A340-600, for example, has about 4 or 6 lavs below deck. So in economy, you walk back to just about that last door, maybe it's a little bit forward of that last door, and you can go downstairs and they have a number of lavs there. And it's very unique. It eats up probably 2 or 4 seats in the economy cabin. You'll never miss it because you can see the frame of the stairs going down, impacting that economy cabin. And it's cool. It's just a very unique experience. And it's a unique feature of, I mean, pretty much all the aircraft that I've flown on.
Yeah, I don't think there are too many airlines that let you go below the passenger floor.
Yeah, yeah. The other unique aircraft is the A380-800 that Lufthansa First Class actually has a urinal in those forward lavs, kind of like where Emirates puts a shower, Lufthansa puts a urinal.
I think I'd rather have the shower.
Me too. Me too.
That's going to have to be another episode. I don't know. We haven't done that story, have we?
No, we have not done the round the world Lao.
The urinal story.
The urinal story.
We're going to set a little breadcrumb out there for you guys. There may be a future story involving a Lufthansa A380 urinal, but anyway. And people's imaginations now have gone wild. It's not as crazy as you guys think. It's pretty pedestrian, actually. But we've set the groundwork.
I so want to say more, but I think I'm going to move on. I think I'm going to move on. So,
but otherwise, how was your first class experience on the A340?
So I know the aircraft was retired and brought back. The seat itself felt fine, but the IFE, the overall
fit and finish,
the interactions, the finish of the hard product felt so antiquated. The IFE has like this sort of touchscreen thing that you need to do on the controller to be able to like navigate around the in-flight entertainment. I mean, it was sort of like, wow, this is 10, 15 years ago. And really it is 15 year ago technology just about when they, you know, that seat is probably nearly 15.
It's not like the first class seat, the current first class seat that's on most of their, you know, that's not a new, it's not a spring chicken as far as first class seats go.
It is not. It is not. The other thing I was really disappointed in is they had Laurent Perrier Grand Cycle, if I'm pronouncing it right, LPGS, in the pre-departure beverages. And then they switched to something far inferior. It was
That's surprising.
It was like a Lanson.
Why would they go that direction?
I don't know, but I was very disappointed to the point where, and I thought it was interesting because my wife got the last bit of the LPGS, and then the flight attendant brought the Lanson, and I think it was Lanson. It was either Lanson or something similar. We're not talking about a Veuve Clicquot caliber. Maybe the pricing is the same, but the Lanson and the like are far more yeasty in the flavor, and just, I don't know, they just don't finish the same way for me. I had a taste of it, my wife had a taste of it, and we were both like, no. And so when I finished my glass, she's like, would you like another glass of the other champagne? And I said, no, thank you. And the flight attendant looks at me and she's like, I'm not surprised. It's just not the same. The flight attendant even knew that that was not amazing.
Right.
The food is just as always on Lufthansa. They try to stretch with kind of unique. I think they had venison or veal versus a steak. I get it. That's the culture. Just felt a little gamey to me, but I always try that stuff. the caviar, I think we both had two helpings. I mean, they
were, that's nice.
They were, it was bottomless caviar. Even our daughter had caviar and she liked it, which makes me nervous.
That sounds exciting. It's been a while since I've had some first class caviar. It's probably been too long.
Yeah. Yeah. The pajamas, not as good as they used to be. The slippers, the slippers better with some nice padding. I'll definitely be using them when I'm standing at my desk from my work at home days.
What kind of amenity kit did they give out?
You know, I can't remember the brand. It was not terribly impressive. The most notable thing was that the hairbrush now has flares. You know how the hairbrush is usually like that kind of rectangular thing and they're just, that folds up. Now some of the little things that go in your hair flare out. So it's not a clear rectangle. I don't know, small little things. But overall, I didn't think it was terribly impressive. Essentially looks like a dot kit.
In latest news, we have new hairbrushes and Lifton's of first class amenity kits.
There you go. That's the highlight. The other thing is that Lufthansa used to have that little bus transfer so you didn't have to do the mobile lounge.
Right.
No.
Is that just the Munich flight, or do you think that's just a thing of the past period?
I don't know if it's a thing of the past or just Munich, but I asked and they said, no, you have to specially request it now. And I'm like, I literally got this flight 3 days ago. There was no way I could
specially
request
this thing. I guess the station manager has changed and, things are not as they were at one time.
It just feels like there's a little bit of a downgrade in the Lufthansa first class experience. Unless you're going through the terminal. Again,
poor
the ground
Trevor.
Experience
He's experienced
is where it
is. Good ground services at Dulles, and now he knows when to be disappointed.
The struggle is real, my friend.
The struggle is real. That's exactly what I was thinking in my head. And with that, listeners, I think we can feel very sorry for our friend Trevor. You know, his champagne was poor and he didn't have the best ground services. Dulles, damn Lufthansa first class. Oh, what a shame.
And that splurge of 8,000 less than the business class flag. You know, the reality, though, is that the flight attendants absolutely loved my daughter. They just thought she was the coolest cabin member. Yep. They were really helpful there. Our daughter just loved the freedom of the first class seat. You forget about how free that seat is.
That's true. It's a lot of space.
And for a little person, where that little area that, you know, you or I just have our feet between the ottoman and the seat, she's like doing calisthenics and stuff because she doesn't need that much space. So she was loving the fact that she had all
that. That is quite an expanse of space for her. But I must admit, though, the Lufthansa first class flight attendants are always usually excellent.
They are.
I think of a bad experience. And they know what they're doing generally. They're always very professional and very welcoming for the most part.
In fact, I hear some of them study the wine list on their time off as well.
Someone's teasing a future episode again, but we'll go into that in a future episode, I think.
I just had to leave one more teaser.
You had to leave one little morsel out there.
Talking about the Lufthansa A380 one day in the future.
One day in the future, we will reminisce about our interesting A380 experience on Lufthansa first class. But with that, I think we're probably at the end of the episode. What do you think?
I would just say that Madrid is a wonderful city. The pickpocketing notwithstanding. And for us, this was a reboot vacation for us. Some go to the beach. Sometimes we do. This was the exact thing we needed to really just reboot, re-baseline. But not for everybody, but we certainly loved it.
Sounds like you had a good time.
Absolutely, we did. And I think with that, we should call the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.